All right, guys, here on this week's episode of Leadership to Wealth podcast, we get into a number of different topics. One of the things that we're going to address today is talking about inflation, what the impact of rising inflation has on your life, my life, on the economy. What are these charts that they're showing us really mean? What are they trying to tell us? We get into all of that stuff today, along with some really controversial topics like the censorship bill, the internet bill, C-111, and its impacts as you and I are starting to already face the reality that we don't have access to certain information from outside of Canada. So we get into that and many other topics all around your freedom, your money. I'm your host, Neil D'Souza, and this is the Leadership to Wealth podcast. Let's look at what this chart's really showing. It's showing a fairly stable inflation rate. Now, just to be clear, something that you pointed out is that this is the percentage increase rate for inflation. This is the Canadian inflation rate chart. And so what this is showing is our annual inflation, how much inflation we have on a yearly basis. Now, we know our target inflation rate is 2%, which means that everything should be increasing in price, let's look at it that way, by about 2% on an annual basis. So whatever you bought last year, it should be worth about, it should cost about 2% more this year. Now, we can see some years, like if you go back to 2008, you can see a massive drop that occurred, right? Because, of course, we know the great financial crisis that caused a massive drop. And stocks and everything went down in price. Now, that is what would normally be called a great buying time. That's a time where everything is on discount and you want to buy stuff like Goldman Sachs stocks at $50 a share. And as you can well guess, most people didn't. And so a lot of people missed out on that. And the large hedge funds and that, they, of course, did quite well. A lot of the larger firms, of course, bought into that market. Or if you were, I guess, gradually buying, then you got to enjoy that upswing. But of course, if you had all of your money in and then you dropped, then you're not really making up anything. You're just getting back up to the norm. Now, what we're dealing with now is you can see if we fast forward to 2020, the drop that occurred as a result of COVID. Now, this, I'm going to try and slow down here because this is an important part. We had that drop because we know everything got shut down. Goods and services were not being purchased because everyone had to stay home. But then the whole online boom occurred. People were starting to buy stuff, having it come to their home. And then as we started to open up, you can see in this chart that everything just shot up. Now, why did everything shoot up? And there's really two reasons there. One is the availability, what most people would call supply and demand. The availability of things that you want to buy was extremely low. So there were more people trying to buy the same stuff. So of course, what did people do? They raised the price on them because they only had a few, and then they weren't gonna have any more product for sale. So people were willing to buy more. In real estate, what this meant was the prices of houses just shot up because people were willing to pay more and more because interest rates were low. So the banks were lending you more money for cheaper. And so the amount of house that you could buy was greater. And so people kept bidding this up. And of course, it shot up by what we have here says 8%. I'm willing to bet that if you looked on a case-by-case scenario, you would actually see that it shot up by more than that in some places. We know that in the area of real estate, that we saw houses going up by 20-30% year over year in some situations. So that 8% is sort of your overall number that they're trying to show you. And then what happened in 2022? Of course, the Bank of Canada started raising rates. The government tried to start reining us in so that we stopped spending as much money that we, remember, this is money you don't have. This is money that you're borrowing on your credit cards, on loans, on mortgages, and all that stuff. That's what this is showing. And so they're trying to slow that down. So the interest rates on everything went up. If you had credit cards, the interest rates on your credit cards went up, all of that stuff. And it all tried to slow down how much you borrowed because it was going to cost more and more of your monthly income to pay for that stuff. And so what did we see? People started slowing down on their purchases. And then we had this bump where it started to go up again, which means that people still had enough money left over at the end of the month, whether it was through cash or credit, that they felt comfortable to start buying again. And so that's why we had inflation rise last month. And now the government of Canada and the Bank of Canada are concerned about that because they want that rate of inflation to go down further. So this is not just about money printing, but also about supply and demand. Sometimes, like during COVID, when we saw this massive demand for toilet paper, you just couldn't find it anywhere. And some places they were selling it for astronomical amounts, even though it was the same toilet paper that you could have gotten the day before for a third of that price or less, depending on the situation, because it just wasn't as much available. So that's what we're seeing. And we can be ready for the Bank of Canada to probably raise rates again to try to stop you and I from spending all of this money and causing the uptick. It's a way of being able to pull back all of those dollars that they released into the system.
So when I look at a chart like this and you see 20 years, 30 years of steady ups and downs where there's nothing massive up and there's nothing massive down, it's a pretty stable story, and even looking at the chart you can kind of see this similarity between what's the machine called when they hook up your heart to it and you see your beep 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 beep.
Is that the EKG or
you know what I'm talking about. So you know, you look at one of those machines and you see somebody's heart going steady over and over, and you're like, okay, that's a healthy heart. That's how this is supposed to be beating, right? Regular, right. Steady ups and downs, right? If you're a doctor and you're looking at someone's heart chart and they have 20 and they have steady, and then a massive dip and a massive plunge and a massive, like, and it keeps, and now it's going huge up and down. I don't think a doctor would look at that chart and say, this is going very well. Right, this is how this is supposed to be going. Looking at this chart, 20 years of stability and then 2 years of massive ups and downs, someone looking at it in an economic perspective, maybe with that kind of doctor's story with it, like, does this look like a healthy chart to you? Or are you looking at this and thinking this is going well, or are we in trouble, right? Is this a bad heart?
Well, I'm going to look at this in a slightly different way. If we're going to look at 20 years, go from 2000 to 2020 and cut off the last couple of years. And most people would say, well, that's fairly normal. But without what we see in 2020 to now, then we have a different reference where we're looking at these spikes and valleys. Right, we see the mountaintops and we see the valleys, and of course we see the 2008 and right there, and then of course that just drops. And so to us, oh my goodness, that's really bad. But then overall you see all of these different spikes and valleys, and we would be concerned by this chart just by looking at that. Mm-hmm. But now the last 20 years looks normal all of a sudden in comparison to what the last 3 years have been. Now, all of a sudden, from the last 20 years just looks like, oh, a normal heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
But if you consider that the great financial crisis happened in the middle of the last 20 years, and it only looks like a blip because of what we have going on right now.
Mm.
Think about that for a second. The great financial crisis just looks like a blip on this chart only because of what we had happened in the last 3 years, what's been going on over the last 3 years. And so the last 20 years aren't really normal. That's what it's been. And it only looks normal in light of what we're dealing with right now. Now, this massive spike should be concerning to us, because you can see it's at least double what the largest spike that you had. And the other thing that you need to look at when you see this is we look at it sideways, but you realize this is inflation, right? So this is the annual inflation rate. So that chart should actually be elevated like this.
Mm-hmm.
So that here's the baseline zero, and it's actually going up, but it's continually going up.
I think if they showed us that chart, it'd be a lot scarier, right?
It would look a lot scary, because all we would see is stuff going up. But instead, our brains look at it and go, oh, yeah, everything's going along fine, but it's not going along fine. It's actually everything's going up. That's inflation. But we like inflation because we have controls and measures that we can actually implement different policies. When you have deflation, like in 2008, there is no control. There's no control the government can implement. That's why they don't like it. Even though it makes it better for you and I, because now all of a sudden things are cheaper again, the government doesn't like it because they're broke as well at that point in time. So, you know, and when your dollar gets stronger, back in 2008, one of the problems is that now you can't sell your goods to other places. We couldn't sell lumber to the States for a period of time because our lumber was too expensive. Because it was crashing, their dollar was crashing over there. And for any Canadians that actually went and invested in the States, man, you were able to buy up American real estate at really low prices at a really good dollar value, Canadian to US. And so a lot of people became millionaires and multimillionaires right off of that one event. And we call it inflation, but you could actually flip the chart. And you could actually watch it going down, because what's actually happening is the value of your dollar and my dollar is actually going down in value.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy less and less stuff for each dollar that you have in hand. But we like to show it up. We call it inflation and show it going upwards. But what that upward trajectory is the number of dollars that are in the system and how much everything sort of costs. That's what's really happening, and that's what the part that should really scare us. So in the overall scenario, did we see the price of gas go down to the 80s, you know, back to 1980s or something like that? Yes, we did, briefly, while everything was closed. And then the moment everything opened up, now everyone wishes they had here in Canada, $1.10 gas again. You know, we're fighting and being excited when we see $1.50 or $1.55 gas. So
if the Canadian economy is a patient and you're a doctor and you're looking at this, do you tell the patient you're near death and desperately need to change everything you're doing, or do you tell the patient, hey, there's some things you need to change, and you know you could become healthier from here, and you know it could be worse, could be better, you know, there's some room to move, or is this a death sentence? What would you tell the patient?
Ooh. Okay, there's two things that when we're looking at this in terms of the health of the economy. Again, I'm not an economist, but
or a doctor.
Let me or a doctor. So let's just look at this what this is actually telling us is that there are things that we need to be concerned about. We need to understand the trajectory of the dollar, of prices, of things. And that's what this chart is sort of telling us. The health of the economy is, it sort of depends, because for each person, it's a little bit different. If you've got someone that's a diver, you know, they're a free diver where they don't take breathing scuba gear or anything like that, and they just take a breath of air and then they swim under the water. That person can lower their heart rate really low and survive just fine on that one breath of air. Meanwhile, I go under and I'm not going to be able to hold my breath that long. And so I'm going to end up drowning. That's what we're seeing. The economy is different for different people. If you've got a bunch of money set aside that you're going to be able to ride out this storm, then you have no worries. You're good. You're going to be able to continue to roll along. But if you don't have those reserves, then you have to figure out, how do I lower what we call burn rate? How do I lower my expenses? How do I make it so that I'm not as much money is going out, so that as we have these turbulent times, I can continue to go along? I just had a conversation with a gentleman who, he's trying to understand how to be investing into this market. And I said, well, for starters, you need to have at least a month's worth of expenses put aside so that you don't have to go to your credit cards. But what we're seeing is that most people are already living on their credit cards. Most of their debts, they've got credit cards, lines of credit, home equity lines of credit, and they just keep adding to that. And if you're doing that, you've got to figure out a way to be able to slow down how much you add onto there, because if rates go up again, you're paying more and more interest on these. You're not even paying the principal. And we're seeing a lot of people that are going to have that problem right now with their homes, and they are losing their homes right now because the amount that they're making in their payments every month is not enough to cover the interest, much less make a principal payment. And so that's the problem that we're running into right now. And each person's situation is specific, and you need to, what we call, know your red line. You got to find that line where I can survive here. Mm-hmm. I can have an emergency fund. If you can make it 3 months or 6 months, that's even better. But at least if you've got a month's worth, then you can breathe. And if something happens, you know you can survive an emergency that might occur. If your boiler goes, your furnace, or something breaks on the car, you can't rely on having to go to your credit cards every time at 22-29% interest. So that's, in terms of the health, it really is on a person's own finances. And if your finances are in a good place, then you're not worried about this at all. But if they're not, then you're going along for the ride. So here's the one thing. Everyone wants to know, is inflation actually going to go up or is it going to go down? Which way is it going? We can see that it's actually moving upwards, which means that people haven't slowed down their buying habits. Do we expect it to continue to go up, or do we expect it to start coming back down? And a lot of that is going to be tied to what the Bank of Canada does in terms of raising interest rates or lowering it. I expect them to raise interest rates again, which means that we should see it start coming back down again. Now, again, this all depends on a whole bunch of other factors in terms of the amount of supply and that. But overall, I do expect, and this is an important one for people that have homes, I do expect that the interest rates will go up again. They've told us very clearly that they expect to raise interest rates at least one or two more times before the year is out. So you can expect that your mortgage costs are probably going to go up, and overall inflation will probably come downwards a bit. We talk about inflation like as if that's the part that we're really worried about. But the part that the government is really worried about is deflation. All governments around the world are terrified of deflation because everyone suffers in a deflation. And if you don't have, without getting too deep into it, if you don't have lots of money circulating, then the whole system slows down, ties up, and only the people with cash are, as the saying goes, cash is king, right? That only the people that have cash will be the ones that can continue to do transactions. Well, our system runs on credit. So as a result, they do not want the system to crash. So if it looks like the value of the dollar is going to increase in value, we're going to have a deflation. We can expect that all governments, our government and governments all around the world, will do whatever they can to inflate their currencies to make sure that it keeps going up. So what can I bet on? What can you probably bet on is that the cost of things will probably increase, will increase over time, because we know that inflationary economics, as it's called, is the government's policy. And so even if it's 2% or 4% or 8%, we know that they always want it to be inflationary. They want the value of the dollar to keep going down over time. That's the plan anyway. So we know that the prices of everything will go up, even if we see everything going down for the next couple of years, which is what it, the government of Canada and the Bank of Canada expect. Massive deflation over the next 2 years, and then continued inflation after that.
Okay, so we all know Canada put in place last year, Bill C-11, and their Canadian government gave more power to the Canadian regulating bodies of broadcasting to decide what Canadians are and aren't allowed to see. So this is the first time that I've seen this in person, where I'm like, oh, I want to go search something up on the internet, and I go look at it and it says the Canadian government won't allow you to see this.
You mean so, the first time you haven't seen something?
That's exactly right. That, And so for somebody that already has such a distrust and distaste for the Canadian government, to see them now controlling what I'm allowed, that what information I'm allowed to see, is quite frustrating. So when you go on Instagram, you want to look up an independent news source, maybe like Bloomberg, and this is what comes up. Mm. It says, people in Canada can't see this content. In response to Canadian government legislation, news content can't be viewed in Canada. So the Canadian government is saying, you're not allowed to see this. We think we're smarter than you. We think this is dangerous. We think we know what's best. You're little children, and you're not allowed to see what we don't want you to see. That's the way that this comes across, right? It doesn't come across as, oh, this is the Canadian government trying to protect me. Anyone knows full well that when a government starts to censor media in all forms, this is a pretty quick road to destruction. So that's my taste of it when I see something like this. What do you think when you go on the internet and start seeing the Canadian government tell you what you are and aren't allowed to see?
The promotion of all of this is to protect Canadian culture.
For
creators. Well, for Canada. We're going to protect Canada's culture is what it's being touted as. And the question is, what exactly is Canadian culture, for starters? What do we want to be Canadian culture is another thing. And you know, take Quebec, for instance. Quebec has been fighting to keep its own culture in its own ways for decades, for 100 years. They've been fighting for it. And they have found a way to keep a bunch of their culture. How? By passing it down from family member to family member, keeping names, all of these types of things, or what we call oral tradition. And here we are talking about protecting Canadian culture. And this is what this censorship bill is. Meanwhile, I called it a censorship bill.
That's what it is.
Protection bill is what we're going to call it. But on the other side, the same government is removing our cultural icons from things like our passport. People like Terry Fox, removing him from the passport, removing all of these different images that connect us to a Canadian culture, they're all being removed. And then this is on the other side. So the two don't really jive. They are, when you look for the connection, you're like that they are in complete opposition. So if that's the case, then what is this really about? Are we really trying to protect Canadian culture? Oh, now we're trying to protect Canadian content creators. Maybe that's what it is, which is interesting because there's also a requirement now for Canadian content creators to register with the government. Why? So that they can make sure that they tax you and make money off of whatever you're going to make. And so what do I think of it? To me, it's garbage. It may be promoted in one way, but it's really showing a different side. And as a Canadian, I think we've always trusted in our ability to see through the garbage that is out there. I mean, we've been making fun of Americans for who knows how many years and always laughing at the things that they look at and think is normal. And now the government of Canada is saying that we do not have the ability to be able to know the difference between what's good, what's bad, what's healthy for Canadians. And they feel the need to protect it in a way that is restrictive of other forms. So that's what we have. And without just flat out saying that this government is trying to, it looks like this government is trying to control us and control what we can see in here. Without just saying that flat out, it definitely is concerning that they're controlling what we have access to.
Yeah. What this screams two things for any person or organization or government that needs to censor their opposition or the person that they're maybe debating against or that has the opposite view. If you need to censor that person and make them be quiet, that only reveals the weakness in your own argument. And if the Canadian government had such a strong foot to stand on to say, this is why you shouldn't see this content because it's so dangerous. The amount of things, the amount of filth that's on the internet and the amount of garbage, like filth that you can see on these sites, and they care about political views and news sites. And these are the kinds of things that they're putting their attention towards.
There's a problem in what you're pointing to here is that we are not making people smarter. We're not making Canadians smarter by censorship. You don't get smarter by only showing one piece of what you want to see. You have to be able to look at both sides of an argument to be able to advance intellectually, to be able to advance your knowledge base and have more to draw on. That's one of the benefits that's always been what it is to be Canadian, is to be able to be neutral and see the different sides. Now, the moment you start removing that information from us, you know, what was the point of originally bringing sex education into the schools in grade eights, talking about these things? Why? So kids would know in advance, hey, this is what happens. You know, if you go out and have sex, you can get a girl pregnant. You could have early pregnancies, all of these kinds of things. Because perhaps at one time we had overprotective parents. Now the government of Canada is becoming that overprotective parent in this area, while at the same time in the school system with sex ed and stuff, they're increasing the amount of information there. So it's really speaking out of both sides of their mouth. On one side, they're saying, hey, we need to know more and more on a sexual side, but on this other side, culturally, politically, educationally, we're going to screen out some of that information that you could get about world events, all of these things on the internet. We're going to screen those things out. So what are they actually trying to do? And is it really of benefit? And I say it's like the overprotective parent that shields their kid too much, such that that child never gets the chance to learn about those items, to learn what the good and the bad is of those items. And that's the problem that we have right now with this type of censorship, with not being able to get information in from other parts of the world. They're saying you and I do not have the ability to filter through misinformation, disinformation. We don't have that ability, and therefore we need the government, 1984 Big Brother, to protect us and tell us what we can and can't see, it because we're not smart enough for that.
I think you're absolutely right, but I would argue that it is the overprotective parent, but not from the perspective of love and caring. It's the overprotective parent in the perspective of jealousy and fear that they're going to go live their own life and leave you behind, if you actually let this person discover, if you actually let the person that you potentially are supposed to care for go and discover the world for the world and the truth for themselves, they're not going to want you anymore.
Yeah,
they're not going to need you anymore. And that
it's not the government's job to be my parent.
Absolutely.
It's the government's job to protect us physically, you know, from an invading force, from terrorists within. Sure, that's their job. Policing, security, fair markets, keeping the markets fair so that we can make money in them, so that we can pay our taxes, all of these kind of things. It is not their job to control our social environment. It's not their job to control what we can and can't learn about. The whole idea of the education system was to give a base level of information, not to control what we could and couldn't learn. So it's not the government's job to be doing that, because the government isn't moralistic. The government is not supposed to be inserting itself into moral issues. That's who we are as human beings. The government is a corporation. It's an entity, an institution. It's not their job to be getting into our personal affairs in that manner. And what we're seeing, whether it's an individual who's in power that's trying to create it that way, if they are, then they're trying to make it about themselves. If it was the corporate structure of the government, the institutional structure of the government that's trying to gain control, well, that doesn't make sense, because somebody has to push that agenda. Because otherwise, the government is supposed to be an extension of we the people. And so we know that when you see this type of overreach, you know that it has an individual's fingerprints on it. Without going down the conspiracy theories, without going down that road, we don't need to. We understand that an entity doesn't care. An institution is going to try to stay amoralistic unless somebody is trying to control it. And for 8 years, we've watched what's happened as our government has tried to be more moralistic, which tells you that somebody is at the helm controlling that. Whether that's whoever we want to say it is, and we want to get them out of power, or if it's somebody else behind the scenes, I don't know. But an institution by its virtue is not, by its nature, is not moralistic and would not be trying to promote the things that we're seeing right now. It's not in its own interest.
And the only thing I'd say off of that, because that was perfectly recapped, is that culture is supposed to impact government. Government isn't supposed to impact culture. Everyday lives of Canadians and how we think about things and the way that we want to go as a country should not be dictated by our government. They should be the ones that reflect what we want, not the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
And the government doesn't know what's best for us. They are not smarter than any of us. In many cases, they're only there because of what their last name is or who they got paid by. They're nowhere near the most moral or intellectual people in the country. And so they're not a good representation of who we actually want to be. And you said it perfectly, that as a organization, that corruption doesn't happen on its own, because that's against its own interest. Like
that's a human, that's a human trait.
Yeah.
Right.
To tear yourself down from within.
Yeah. Corruption is a human trait. Incompetency is much more of an institutional trait, but corruption is a human trait. Somebody trying to benefit within the government. And so an institution in and of itself has its rules, has its vision, what it's trying to do. Well, who controls that vision? It's supposed to be us. It's supposed to be us, the people. And all I know is that these interests that we're seeing right now are not in the interest of the people.
Yeah, nowhere near.
As much as they may want to pretend that it is, these are not at the interest of the people. And you can ask the people that are losing their houses right now, and they can tell you what's going on has not been to their benefit.
For someone listening to this that's thinking, well, that all might be true, but also maybe Canadian creators do need more attention. And also maybe this will help Canadian content, and maybe this will help Canadian culture and push more of that. I could see why you think that way, but go do some research on what every media platform stated when Canada announced that this is the direction they were going to go. Every media platform, Meta, YouTube, Google, all of them announced, if Canada does this, this is going to negatively impact Canadian content, not positively. The way that their feedback loops work, 90% of the content that Canadians get right now is from outside of Canada. So the majority of content that we like to see, we know that it's not coming from our own country, but that's not what we care about. We don't care if it's made in Canada or not. We want to see content that we're interested in. So if all that content is now pushed out and we're only seeing content based on the location we live in and the country we live in, not our interests, then we're going to stop watching those things. We're going to dislike them. We're going to not comment. And that pushes that content out less, because there's less interaction, less people care about it, because nobody cares about where it's made. So if that was actually their intention, is to make it so that people have more Canadian content to watch, they're shooting themselves in their own foot. And it's like, even if that was their main goal, they screwed up.
I don't want to make this overly simplistic. There's a lot. Obviously, my forte is within economics, but I'm also a human being. I've been here in Canada, a Canadian, for many, many years. And part of what we're looking at is what's our overall trajectory? What's our overall mission? Are we moving in that direction? Well, as Canadians, to identify yourself as a Canadian, that is a nationalistic view. We're Canadians. That's our nation. And we rally under that flag and under that banner. Well, we know that our current government has aligned itself with globalization. We want to be part of this global world. We want to lessen our national identity and increase our global identity. And so we're seeing some very conflicting views. On one side, we're saying, oh, we need to protect Canadian culture. Meanwhile, on the other side, they're trying to expand and say, no, we're part of this whole world and we're moving in a globalistic direction. That duality is inconsistent. And when you're looking for a leader, what you need is consistency. And we're not getting that. And so when you watch that, what it really says to me is that's divisionary. Like it creates divisions. What's the game of that? I don't know. I don't play that game. For me, it's about how do we make money in the economy we're in. And so I'm looking at all of this and I'm thinking, what you really need to have and what I really need to have is to be able to have an escape plan. You need to be able to have an exit plan. If this country goes further down this road, it only means bad things for the citizens of this country. And so you may want to be ready to leave Canada if we continue down this trajectory. So that's the way that I really look at it, is prepare myself, prepare my family to be able to leave if they continue down this road. Because what we're talking about, what our government is talking about right now, is nationalism, but it's also talking socialism. And that national socialistic agenda we've seen before. And that's what led to World War II, was a country that signed over to a national socialist, and they were called Nazis. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to throw out and say that that's who we are, but that's the direction that our current government is headed. So that when you look at that, without going into that type of, is this what they're trying to do? They're trying to control us that way and go down. I don't know. And so I don't want to speculate, but I can tell you historically, that is the direction that these decisions are pointing. And that's great for you and I, if we look at it from a financial standpoint, because we know what decisions are going to make. They're going to keep the poor down, and they're going to continue to bleed the middle class. They're going to continue to tax the middle class and bring them further down. And that only increases the gap between the rich and the poor. And that's what we're watching happening right now, today, out on the streets. There's blood in the streets. And that is the middle class that is having their wealth taken from them day by day. That's what we're watching right now.
Yeah. And the only add on to that is to make it a more final statement, where it's not so much that this kind of censorship could be a bad thing, because that's what history has pointed to in the past. That is what has happened every single time. There's yeah. not one story in history where you could point to and say the governing power decided what information everyone needed to know, and that led to truth and prosperity. Right, that always, if the governing power decides what the truth is, that always leads to nothing but lies and death, frankly, right? Look at the USSR, look at this, the Nazis, all these things that thought we're going to be world powers, we're going to rule the world, and then they destroy themselves from within because they thought they could dictate what the truth is. And the whole point of debate and discourse and differing opinions is that there's a truth somewhere in the middle, and we're on two opposite sides of it. And if one side says we're not allowed to hear that, you're not allowed to understand or hear that side of it, then you're only moving further and further away from the truth.
Yeah.
Right. You're not getting closer to it. So it's literally it's a rule of physics. It's a rule of history. It's a rule of the universe that you can't, there's a yin and yang to everything. Yeah. And if you think it's just yang and you don't need to hear the yin, then you're, it doesn't work that way.
The piece there that I'm hopeful about is that we will see this current government removed from power within a year and a half. That's the hope. Now, history tells us that they will try to find a way to reclaim power, to keep it, to remove their opposition. I mean, that's what previous national socialist parties have done, is you actually remove your opponents. Will they try to remove their opponents, you know, when we get closer to the election? That's a good possibility. In throughout history, what did you normally do? How'd you remove your opponents? You actually came in with physical force, you got rid of them, you took the person away, you arrested them, put them in jail, that kind of stuff. We're actually watching that happen in the States right now, where whether you like Donald Trump or not, who cares? The reality is that they are using the legal system to try to remove an opponent.
Right.
That's what's happening. Could that happen here? it absolutely could happen here. And I would be scared of that occurring. But barring that, my hope is that we see a transition of power. We see this change. And maybe we can allow ourselves and our culture and our society to be able to enjoy the freedoms that we've enjoyed for hundreds of years now.